Support for Looking Up comes from iOne Unique Eyewear on Hyde Park Square. iOne carries astronomical telescopes, binoculars, and accessories from well-respected brands Celestron and Explore Scientific. You can stop in and meet their telescope expert to discuss the telescope that best suits your needs. iOne Unique Eyewear. Wicked cool eyewear. i-1.com.
Hey, Anna, so I got something I brought with me to the studio. This is very exciting. You ready? Look at this.
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know. You can't tell what it is. But it is an actual rock from the moon. A real moon rock.
What?
Are you, like, blown away?
I'm a little worried about how you obtained this. Was this at space camp?
Well, you know, I know some guys.
They let you wander off.
You know, hey, I found it. It fell out of the back of the space shuttle. I can't answer all these questions. No, but it does bring up a good question. Mm-hmm. So how did I get this? Because it is illegal for me to buy, sell, or own a piece of the moon rocks that were brought back by the astronauts.
Uh-oh.
So
are you telling me something here?
And I'm saying this on air, so I'm not admitting.
Am I an accomplice to something now?
Yes, you're in it. You're in it with me now. I'm not admitting to crimes here on the air. I don't have a rock from the Apollo missions. So how did I get this rock from the moon?
I don't know.
I went there myself. No, just kidding.
I did not know you.
Just kidding.
Oh, Dean, you're funny today.
How did I get this rock? Well, this is a rock that actually fell to Earth from the moon. So we go back a long, long time ago.
And are you being funny?
No, I'm being serious. Is that the moon is out there. You see all those craters on the moon, right?
Yeah.
That's places where asteroids ran into the moon a long time ago and left these giant holes, these craters. Well, some of those impacts are so forceful that it broke off pieces of the moon.
It was just naturally crusty up there.
Nope. This is all from impacts from the external space. And so these pieces broke off the moon, went out into space, were flying around space for thousands and thousands of years and millions of years, and then cross paths with the Earth, shoot across the sky like a shooting star, hits the ground.
Fell in your hand.
And falls right in my hand. And with a little label
first
says,
bounce.
Moon.
You're like, yes.
That's how I got it. Amazing. Well, no, it fell. This one actually fell in the Sahara Desert. They pick it up and they're like, okay, this is a meteorite. And then they can actually chemically analyze it and say, yes, this came from the moon because it's exactly like the rocks Neil Armstrong and them brought back. And so that is how I got this moon rock.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome, is it not?
It is awesome.
And so, yeah.
That was a good story.
Thank you very much. I try, you know, whenever I can.
Every now and then I just kind of doze off, but that was a good one.
Yeah,
that was interesting.
If you see a real moon rock, it is one of the rarest substances on Earth. So.
And they can compare it to make sure that you're not just like, this is a moon rock, but it's out actually gravel from my driveway or whatever.
That's what the guy told me.
That's right. Get out of the back of his
truck. The back of the space shuttle.
Cash only.
He had a spacesuit on, so he looked legit. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. I've got questions about all things astronomical, and Dean, as an astronomer, has all the answers. On this episode, we're joined by space journalist, author, and Dean's fellow solar system ambassador, Nancy Atkinson. So, solar system ambassador, Regas.
I know, you gotta love that title.
this is like, wouldn't it be funny if there was like ambassadors to like different planets and stuff? Like
I know.
Jupiter is ambassador.
Okay. I'll meet Mars as ambassador
that's
someday.
Right.
That's what I aspire to.
I know that you're being serious and it's...
Actually, a little bit, yeah.
So, because of your elevated status within the NASA community, obviously, you got a special loan.
Yes. So, yeah, the rock that I have here is just my little personal asteroid that
fell
to Earth.
Yeah,
it just fell in my hand. But I'm going to get some actual rocks from NASA that were recovered by the Apollo missions. And they are also very, very small. By the way, it's not like I'm holding this giant, like, boulder in my hand.
We'll put a picture on the...
It's very tiny.
We'll put a penny next to it for scale.
Because it's smaller than a penny. And these rocks that NASA are loaning me are likewise very small and embedded in like lucite. So I can't even like do anything.
Break them out.
No, I mean, if I lose them, that's it. I'm out of the solar system.
Former solar system ambassador, Rikus.
Right. Exactly. They will, they will exile me to the to Valles Marineris on Mars. So
okay, nerdy jokes aren't going to
work. Yeah, it didn't work on you. Sorry. Over the head. But anyway.
Sorry. I forgot we were talking about because I was thinking about that joke.
That's right.
But now for these rocks that they lend you, there's like all kinds of protocols though.
Yes. So, yeah, I get them in like this certified mail. I've got a sign for them. They have to be secured in a safe at all times.
Chained to your wrist and the other things around the briefcase kind of thing is what I'm envisioning.
Wait till you see the briefcase.
I cannot wait.
It does look like those kind of briefcases. And I don't have to handcuff it to myself, but it has to be on my person or in my charge while it's outside of the safe.
Your ambassador status.
So if I'm carrying this around, I have that case in my hand and I'm not putting it down.
Really?
And so then I can open it up and show people and then I close it down again.
I would be terrible at this.
And then I have to put it back in the safe before I can go home.
Oh my gosh.
So I can't, because if I lose it, it's over. You'll not see me anymore.
You'll disappear.
That's right. Exactly.
Oh man, that's intense.
But they are really cool to see because from different missions, from different Apollo missions and different parts of the moon and it's really cool to be able to just say you held a piece of the moon.
The moon?
Exactly.
Or a whole thing of lucite.
Well, the lucite's what you're holding. But yeah, it's true. Good point.
That's exciting, though. The 50th anniversary of the moon landing is all anybody's talking about.
Yeah, in my world, at least. Yeah.
No, it's true. It's true. It's, nerd culture is very big right now. And honestly, nerd in a good way.
Is there a bad way?
No, okay. No, that's what I was just trying to speak to it. It seemed like I was name calling because I'm not at all. The whole thing of going to the moon, it took a couple tries.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of tries. I mean, first you had the preliminary stages. I mean, the missions before Apollo that came first, it was the Mercury missions, the Gemini missions, where, they went on pretty short flights and some to longer flights, and they had to practice docking, rendezvousing, all this kind of stuff. And then you get to the Apollo missions, and so their ultimate goal is to go to the moon, send people to the moon, bring them back safely. Mm-hmm. And it started so tragically. I mean, the first Apollo 1 was this fire that broke out in the capsule on the ground. Like they weren't even launching. They were just doing some testing.
I mean, how is that even I mean, it's so tragic.
It's still kind of like this weird thing, group of things that happened at once. And so the three astronauts in there died, like, I mean, and not even, leaving the ground. And that was this ominous start to it. And yet they persevered. They figured out what the problems were. And then they sent up these other little test missions to go up around the Earth. And then when we got to Apollo 8, it was the one that really made the big leap. Instead of going just around the Earth, it blasted off past the Earth all the way to the moon. And the three astronauts there circled around the moon. And then what was that memorable moment when they come around the backside of the moon and there's the Earth, in the blackness of space, 240,000 miles away. And
I'm physically ill thinking about what that would look like.
I know. And that's
crazy.
Everybody that's your only place on the universe where you're going to survive any length of time. And that's where everybody lives. And that moment. And so Apollo 8, they didn't land on the moon, but they got that perspective. And then Apollo 9 did another mission, an Earth orbit mission. And then Apollo 10 did everything but land. They flew to the moon, circled the moon, dropped a lander down, didn't land.
I feel like you never hear about Apollo 10 either.
Exactly.
And really.
And so, you think about those astronauts, they're like, all right, we're pretending we're going down. We're not going to land. No, we're not going to land. They're like, oh, whoops, we can't stop. We landed.
He's got to use the bathroom, so.
Oh, shoot, we landed. Sorry. Sorry. My bad.
Oh, well.
Well, that's one small step for a man, one giant leap.
And, do you think they thought about it?
Oh, God. They had to have. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, these are a lot of these pilots and, they're used to following orders. But God, oh, man. You know, if you're a human being, wouldn't you be thinking about it?
Yes. Absolutely. Like, I would be terrible in be this
like,
capacity.
I'm way better of an astronaut. Like, I'm right here. The moon's right there.
I can see it.
Let me do it, please.
I'm just going to hop out for 1 second.
Yep. Yeah.
Man. Now,
but so so everything went pretty smoothly on that Apollo 10 mission, and then that really set the stage for Neil and Buzz and Michael Collins to make the trip. And man, it wasn't easy and it wasn't assured, but boy, I mean, a lot of work that went into it.
Is there any discussion of the irony that Apollo is the god of the sun, but that we use the moon to go to the moon?
Yeah, that is a...
Did we think this through?
No, NASA? Not really. I'm not sure what the background of what Apollo...
Were they just
running
through gods?
Yeah,
they're like Mercury, Gemini. I mean, Gemini's not even really a... I mean, that's like not a great...
No,
Gemini.
It's a constellation. And the Gemini one, I think they were going for because they sent two people on each capsule. So it was the twins. And so...
Oh, well, okay. So they could justify that.
But Apollo had three astronauts. I don't know.
They weren't going up in a chariot. I mean, that's like...
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. Well, anyway, they didn't think that one through.
But, not at all, but that's all right.
But, I think one of the kind of more interesting parts about it is, you know, looking back 50 years of how these astronauts were kind of upheld, like they were just like these heroes that went to the great beyond and made it back. And it seemed like everybody, you know, wanted a piece of them. Everybody wanted to like ask them questions, and they went on a world tour basically.
But they had to go in quarantine first, right?
Think about that.
They're so in demand. They're like, sorry, we're in this trailer for the next 3 weeks or whatever it was. How long was it?
I think two weeks they had to stay. So they leave the Earth. They're gone for 8.5 days. Mm-hmm. They go to the moon and back. They land in the ocean. They get picked up on a carrier.
Oh, that is terrifying too.
And then go right into quarantine right away for 2 weeks. So you're like, yeah, I just landed on the moon. I'm Neil Armstrong. They're like, back of the van. Get in the back of the van. Sorry.
We have a plastic bag for you to wear. Just cover yourself.
That's right.
You're the boy in the bubble now.
Yeah. And then, so they didn't do that later with later missions because they did this as a precaution. Like, are you going to bring a moon germs back? And, but, you know, they took no chances. And that was pretty amazing. And we're really excited to actually have the Apollo 11 capsule coming to Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Museum Center is going to be getting that this fall, and along with some great Apollo exhibits. So we're super psyched about having all this stuff here coming to us.
That's going
to
be really exciting.
Well, we recently spoke with Fraser Cain, the creator of the Universe Today website, and our guest today is a contributor to that site, as well as the author of Incredible Stories from Space, and her latest is 8 Years to the Moon, The History of the Apollo Mission. Nancy Atkinson, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, now there's a lot of stuff about the Apollo missions coming out this year because of the anniversary, but your book takes a little unique approach to it. And instead of focusing on the moon landing itself, you kind of talk a little bit more about the process and the lead up to it. Tell us more about that.
Right. So, it's estimated that it took approximately 400,000 people around the world to get the Apollo missions to the moon. And so I wanted to tell the stories of some of those people, some who the general public has likely never heard of, but yet who made important contributions to the effort. I wanted to share kind of unique behind the scenes stories to kind of remind people what it took for us to actually reach the moon back in 1969.
And not just Americans, but all around the world?
Yeah. So there were people, one group of people that I talk about worked in the communications area, and there were radio communication radar dishes out in Australia and also in Spain as well. But I talk about the people in Australia and what they had to go through to make everything to work, because they actually started the transmitting the moonwalk back in 1969 for Apollo 11. Oh. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your background. Have you always been fascinated by the moon landing and this topic and its importance?
Yeah, I I really have been fascinated, and I think I attribute it to the Apollo program. I was pretty young when the Apollo program was going on, but I do remember sitting there and with my family and watching it on TV, and I think that just kind of stuck with me. And so I've always been interested in space exploration and feel I have one of the best jobs in the world because I get to write about space exploration and astronomy and share it with people all around the world.
And, wow. And so you interviewed a lot of people for this book and talked to some people from behind the scenes. And so what kind of personal stories did you hear and any surprises that you came up from your interviews?
Well, when I started talking to people, first of all, it was kind of hard to get a hold of them because they're all in their 70s and 80s now. And so most of them are retired and not working at NASA anymore or at any of the contractor companies. So it took a little sleuthing to find them. But once I did, they were really excited to tell their stories. A lot of them had never been asked to share their stories on, you know, on a wider stage besides, you know, just sharing stories with their family and friends, that kind of thing. So they were excited to tell their stories. The kind of a common thread was that they were all really young, you know, just out of college. So in their 20s, maybe some of them were in their 30s. They were considered kind of old folks if they were in their 30s. Wow. We're all kind of young and wide-eyed and wanting to do something big and important for their country. You know, as much as Apollo was about solving all types of technical challenges and inventing things that needed to be invented to reach the moon and, you know, spurring the development of computers, that type of thing, it really was kind of a political theater at its highest levels and on the biggest stage in front of all the world. And so there's kind of this great juxtaposition in how it captured attention back then and also how we view it in history, because there was this mantra of doing things that had never been done before and capturing the spirit of exploration and discovery and taking the human spirit to new heights, those kind of things. But then there was all the political reasons for why we went to the moon, you know, the U.S. versus the Soviet Union, democracy versus communism. So, yeah, it's a great story, just from all the personal effort that it took. It was really ordinary people coming together to do something really extraordinary.
So you got all these interviews and great perspectives, and I have to ask, is there anybody that you really wanted to talk to or tried to get a hold of and you kind of wish you would have been able to talk to?
Well, when I first started out, I thought, well, I should really talk to, you know, Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins. They're the astronauts from Apollo 11 that are still alive. Uh-huh. But once I started talking to people who worked really behind the scenes, I figured that's what I really wanted to do, was to focus on the behind the scenes people, because as I said earlier, the general public has likely never heard of these people, but they made such an important contribution and really made it possible to go to the moon. So I feel really honored and really lucky that I got to talk to the people that I did.
Well, so, you know, we look back on this 50 years ago, and it's, you know, and it seems like it is an inevitability that we're going to make it to the moon. You know, from talking to the people, did they express any, like, fears, like, during it? Like, boy, I don't know if this is going to work. Like, you know, we've got 8 years to get this thing up there, or, you know, did you get any of that impression, like this kind of worry about, you know, doing this fast and doing all that in that amount of time?
Oh, yeah. There was one gentleman that I talked to. His name is Henry Pohl, and he was with NASA, and he worked with Wernher von Braun and the rocket team in building the large rockets. And he said that when he heard President Kennedy's challenge to reach the moon before the end of the decade, he thought that was the craziest thing he had ever heard in his life.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he admitted to that in the interview.
Because he... Oh, yes. He used a stronger word than crazy.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And because, you know, he was right there working on the rockets, you know, and he said, you know, we had rockets blowing up over 50% of the time. You know, they considered a rocket launch a success if it made it off the launch pad and maybe flew for about a minute before it blew up.
Mm.
you know, so there was some technological challenges, and they were big. They were big challenges that needed to be met before they were going to, you know, not only get into Earth orbit, but also to the moon. Because when President Kennedy made that challenge to Congress in 1961, May of 1961, the U.S. had 15 minutes of spaceflight experience. Alan Shepard in his 15-minute suborbital flight. And that's all the experience that we had.
Wow. So that was before John Glenn then, I guess. Yeah, the announcement was made. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we've got the 50th anniversary coming up. And so what do we have to look forward to? How are you celebrating? What should we think about on that anniversary?
Well, I'll be celebrating by talking about my book at a few different places, so I'm looking forward to doing that. But I think no matter where you live, if you're in the U.S., there's probably some event close to you if you check out your local science museum or library or planetarium, that kind of thing. I'm sure they've all got events, so look for something like that in your local area. I think it's a good opportunity to look back at U.S. history during that time. You know, not only was Apollo going on, but we had all of the things in the 60s going on. You know, the racial issues and the political issues, the Vietnam War, assassinations, Woodstock, pretty much everything you can think of happened in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And it's really an interesting time. And I try to incorporate that, all of those things into the book as well, to kind of give a flavor of what it was like to live in the 1960s.
Well, it's a great book, and I think it's looking at this from a really different perspective. And we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've been talking with Nancy Atkinson, author of the new book, 8 Years to the Moon, The History of the Apollo Mission.
All right, so normally we do a kid question in this segment, but I think we're going to switch it up a little bit because I have a question.
All right,
perfect. I think it fits perfectly, and I've been waiting because I'm not supposed to ask you things at the office. I have to ask you on the podcast now, so...
Yeah,
I'm asking
that's
you
just
now.
That's just my way of not talking to you then. But okay.
Damn it. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. So the big question is, we're talking about the moon landing. 50 years. Huge deal. Etc. Why haven't we gone back?
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, the last...
I know.
I know, because you made it right. The last mission that went to the moon was Apollo 17, and so they left in 1972. So we're talking...
We were like, be back later. We ghosted the moon. We're
right.
Like, that's it.
Yeah. Sorry, it's been real.
That's
like,
right.
You're a great...
You're fun.
You're a great moon.
It's
I love you.
Not you.
It's I just can't afford this anymore.
You're breaking me, Moon.
Yeah. And that is actually the bottom line. It's so expensive to go to the moon. The Apollo missions were billions of dollars to do. I mean, and we kind of figured out about as much as we were going to figure out at that time. So,
made of cheese.
It's not made of cheese. It's made of rocks. Mm-hmm. We landed in 6 different places. We got samples from these 6 different places. And it really was kind of like a been there, done that thing.
Oh.
And, I think Nancy touched upon it a little bit was that, this was also a political thing. It was a race to get to the moon first before the Russians, before the Soviet Union. And so we kind of did it. And that was the thing. So, but what purpose to go back again? We're working on it. The latest plan from NASA is called Artemis. You were asking about Apollo being a...
Yeah, this is appropriate.
Terribly named mission. I mean, you're right in here.
I did not say terribly.
No,
you're trying to try and sense the... Listeners.
That's true. She did not say that.
Did I?
But so the new plan is called Artemis, and that's the Greek goddess of the moon.
That's
and
right.
And so the idea is to send up a spacecraft to lunar orbit and then have a kind of a permanent or semi-permanent moon space station. So this craft is circling around the moon. And so we would shuttle.
A space station on the moon?
Around the moon. Yeah, it'd be orbiting the moon.
Okay.
Like we have the International Space Station going around the Earth. This would have a space station going around the moon. And so then you fly from Earth to that space station, and then you can go from the space station down to the moon very easily. So you go down and up, you shuttle back and forth. And so I like the plan. I think it's really bold.
You do. I got your seal of approval.
Because, yeah, our space station now is, it's okay. I give it a 6 out of 10. They missed a lot of things. Having a capability of going from the space station to the moon.
Oh.
They didn't include that. So, or Mars. And, you know, but yeah, I'll move on. This new one is awesome.
It's great.
And so I really like the idea of this concept. Now, the tricky part is, and so it'd be a four-person crew going to the moon. And the idea is to land by 2024. And that.
Land on the moon.
Yeah.
From the space station.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Yeah. So by my count, that's 5 years, right?
I genuinely don't know. Yeah.
That is fast.
Pretty tired.
Is super fast.
Oh, it's too soon. We've already done it though.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean to build the space station?
Yeah. Yeah. So we did it 47 years ago and we don't have that stuff anymore. It's, you know, it's on display in Huntsville and various other places, you know. So yeah, we got to build a lot of stuff from scratch. We don't have a moon space station. And so this is pretty bold. And so could we do something like this in 5 years? It's possible if we really get our act together. And that's the thing to check out. So yeah, check out the Artemis mission and their plan. And only time will tell, but I think it's a pretty bold initiative, and I think it'd be a lot of fun. The great adventure of going back to the moon. And
do you want to go?
I would.
What if they're like, Dean, we need you. You have to go up.
I would do it. I would do it.
Really?
If it's a 2 week trip, I'll do that.
That's so good of you.
I do it for the country.
You're such a statesman.
Hero. If they asked me to go to Mars, and that would be a 2 year trip, I'd be like, I wish I could. I got some stuff I forgot the laundry.
I'm in the middle of this great next Netflix series.
That's right, exactly. So the question, your brilliant question,
so brilliant.
Why haven't we gone back to the moon? we did it. We've been there, done that. But now we have a chance to go back, because what we're going to do is test out systems to go to Mars, and that's the big one. That's the big prize.
Exciting. Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Nancy Atkinson for joining us. You'll find a link to her and her books on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
We are now officially 2 years old. We've been here for 2 years doing this program. And if you've been listening from the start or are new to Looking Up, we'd sure love to hear from you with topic or guest ideas, space questions, or whatever's on your mind. Drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Parents, we hope you'll share Looking Up with your kids and send us any questions they may have. And if you're a teacher, we'd love to hear from you and your students about space, planets, astronauts, whatever. Our email is lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts. And please give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thank you for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.